Good morning. I'm Michael Miller, the Germans from Russia bibliographer at North Dakota State University in Fargo, and I'm also on the Lawrence Well Collection Committee at the university. It's May 21st, 1994, and I'm in Branson, Missouri, during the grand opening weekend of the Lawrence Welk Champagne Theater and Welk Resort Center. And it's a real privilege for me to visit with Fern Renner Welk, Mrs. Lawrence Welk, and we're going to have Mrs. Welk introduce herself, and then we're going to talk a little about her early life back in North Dakota. Fern, if you would say, first of all, when you were born.
I was born in August 26, 1903.
1903. And the name of your parents?
My dad's name was Matt Renner. My mother's name was Elizabeth Anton Weber. I mean Renner.
She was an Anton.
A-N-T-O-N was her last name.
Right. And your parents, Fern, were they born in the old country?
They were born in Russia.
Do you remember? They were
both my parents. And they were German Russians. They immigrated to their grandparents under Catherine the Great, mm-hmm. when she went back to Germany and then brought German people to resettle in Russia. And my mother and dad grew up. My dad was in the Russian army for a while. When he got out, he met my mother, and they were married.
So they were married over there in
Russia? They were married over there, and they lived over there. They had the first three children were boys. And they decided they didn't want them in the Russian army, you know, when they grow up. They decided to immigrate to the United States.
What year was that, Fern, do you remember?
It was in around the middle 1890s when they immigrated. And they settled in North Dakota.
Where did they settle?
They were on farms about 7 miles south of Mandan.
Is that around the St. Anthony area?
Yeah. Well, grew up in St. Anthony, but I was born on the ranch. My mother had a 750-acre ranch. My dad died when I was four. When he came to the United States, he bought a German-English dictionary and taught himself English and learned it very well, where he served on juries and stuff like that. And he was serving on jury in Mandana one day, and they were out to lunch, and he fell off the chair there, and they rushed him to St. Alexis Hospital in Bismarck, and he had a ruptured appendix. Mm-hmm. And he got uremic poisoning, and after about a week he died. And I was 4 years old, and I was always his pet. In the mornings when mother would get up, mm-hmm. I'd go and crawl in bed with dad, and he always say, "Put some candy under the pillow. She'll be in here pretty soon." And the first thing I'd do, I'd go and run my hand under the pillow and get the candy out. Mm-hmm. And when he was so sick in the hospital, he asked mother, he said, is Fern missing me? What does she say? You know? Mm-hmm. And I did, and I remember seeing him in the coffin. You know, in those days, the dead were laid out in the home. Mm-hmm. And I remember the house being packed with people. And my aunt took me over to the coffin, and I went over there. She lifted me up to look in. I remember this as plain as anything. Mm-hmm. And she said, "He's sleeping." And I thought, no, he's not sleeping. There's something radically wrong. I, in my mind, knew that he was dead. So when she put me down, I thought, gee, they were always so busy on the ranch. Everybody was so busy. And my dad is gone now. And I thought, gee, there are so many people here. One of them might take me. So I went up in the attic and hid. So I didn't tell anyone. And we had screen windows stored up there. It was the winter. He died on the 6th of December. And I crawled behind there. Well, I fell asleep and they were looking for me all over and couldn't find me. Finally, my sister went upstairs and searched through there and she found me sleeping back there. I felt very insecure after my dad died because he was always the one who fussed over me. Life must go on, and I can remember, I think my mother did a terrific job. She had a brilliant mind, and I remember one time my oldest brother took over. He was 21 when Dad died, and he took over, he and Mother, running the ranch. And they were in Mandan at the bank. She was thinking of buying another quarter of land. And they were checking it over, and my brother and the banker were figuring how much everything would be and how it would. And she stood and looked over there, and she said, that'll be so and so much. And the banker and Ambrose were just floored that she could figure it out in her head before they had figured out on paper. Mm-hmm. And my dad was a type of person. He was real easygoing and very kind. And he was a good farmer. I can remember when they used to, as I was growing up, talking about, so when there was crop failure, a lot of times I heard him say in our family that they could reap part of a harvest if they plowed deeper and get where they get more and more moisture. And so my dad always did that, and he'd lend grain after crop failures. The next year he'd just give so many bushels to some of the neighbors, said, when you get your crop, you can give it back. Well, when he died, Mother had trouble. They wouldn't pay. They said, you have nothing signed to her. But he was that type of a man. And the family always said that the priest at the funeral of my dad said, if this man didn't go to heaven, there's no reason for us to. He was kind and understanding and helpful. Mm-hmm. But Mother was the businesswoman. Wasn't when he was alive, he handled everything, but afterwards, it was no time, and she was financially independent. And she was always financially independent. She knew how to manage her money. My second oldest brother was a pharmacist. Got his degree from the University of Minnesota. He had his own pharmacy in Strasburg, North Dakota. And he served his apprenticeship after he had his degree in Richardson, one of the pharmacies there. Then he had his own pharmacy. I had a very happy childhood. The ranch was big. We had a nice creek was running through rolling hills. And I was adventurous. And I think it was about 7 or 8, I would go down to the creek and go along the creek, you know, and inspect everything. There were wild choke cherries, there were wild raspberries, wild gooseberries, and all that. And I would, did we arrive in June, I would gouge myself with that. I would walk around and investigate everything. I was curious about everything. And my uncle was guardian over us, my dad's brother, Joe Renner. He had also immigrated, he and his wife, and they lived about 2 miles from us. They had their ranch. And when I got ready and wanted to go away to school, he said, Elizabeth, he said, why do you want to send her away to school? He said, she should stay here and get married like the rest of them. You know, that was it.
Yes.
They didn't think of going to school. And I can still see my mother. She said, Joe, if she wants an education, she can have an education. Too bad we're so dumb, she said. And I went. And my oldest brother, he would have loved to have gone away to school. And when I'd come home and he would say, oh, how I wish I was in your shoes. I would love to. But he educated himself quite a bit. Mm-hmm. My mother never learned English.
She never learned English?
No, she never learned English. You know, that area was all German Russians.
Uh-huh.
And well, most of all. We did have Norwegian people and Hungarian people, but they were the minority. And you know, the German people, they were kind of clannish. And maybe it is understandable, because they came from an area over there where they were all kind of congregated in one area. And here was somebody who was like them, you know, the culture, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, however, my brothers and sisters all spoke English, you know. And I didn't speak a word of English until I started school. And on the ranch, we started in public school, you know. And I can remember I started in public school. And in a few months, they promoted me from the first to the second grade. Because I caught on. But children do. They learn. That's why I'm against bilingual education from the standpoint of putting Spanish books into schools or Italian or you name it. I feel that you should learn the language of the country and establish yourself in that. And then I believe in other languages. I think it's nice to be bilingual. Now, I took German, real German, when I was in high school.
Where was this at, Fern?
This was in Fargo. I don't think it was the presentation nuns, and I don't
believe... Oh, that's where you went to school.
Yeah. I don't think they're there anymore.
Uh-huh.
And, from there, I went to Sacred Heart in Yankton,
mm-hmm.
and then into nursing school there in Yankton.
Was that at Mount Marty?
No, Mount Marty was the college, and you know, Sacred Heart Hospital.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and it was right just down maybe a quarter mile or so on the bluff of the Missouri River. Mm-hmm. It was a beautiful setting.
Mm-hmm.
And our doctors that we had there, the best doctor we had and surgeon, Dr. Tierwaller, said to us one time, You girls don't know how lucky you are to be training in a smaller hospital. We got into every department. We got training in x-ray and everything. Surgery, of course, all the hospitals have their nurses go into surgery. But it was more extensive training than he was a doctor who had trained in Chicago and had taken his internship at Mercy Hospital in Chicago. And he said the nurses there don't get the extensive training that you girls are getting here. Mm-hmm. So we felt very fortunate.
Did your mom, going back to the farm and back south of Mandan, of course you were 4 years old when your father died in 1907, and then your mother, of course, had to raise the family. How many children were there at the
eight.
Time? There were eight children.
I never heard her say, "Oh my, I'm a widow and I've left with eight children." She was a type person. She just put her shoulder to the wheel and forged ahead. And she had a terrific mind. Mm-hmm. And the boys, of course, the three oldest ones were boys. And when Ambrose got married, moved away, then Nick. However, Nick went to school, by the way, he's a pharmacist, you know. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's died since. And then Charlie ran the ranch, and Charlie died in 1918 flu, you know, when that mm-hmm. flu was so bad. And but she was very successful. She was careful when she borrowed money to pay off the mortgages and, mm-hmm. and whatever, like I told you. Mm-hmm. And she was very successful.
Did she talk much about the old country back
no,
in Russia?
They were too busy with, you know. Well, she may have to the older ones.
Right.
But see, there was Ambrose, Nick, Charlie, Rose, Bridget, John, then I. I was second youngest, and then Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And in my family, they're all dead, except Bridget in Bismarck. And she has a terrible hearing problem.
Mm-hmm.
I can't talk to her in a long distance.
Oh.
No, because she doesn't know what apparently she doesn't have a hearing aid or something.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's terribly hard mm-hmm. to talk with her. So
growing up with eight children, of course she had a lot of responsibilities and everybody had their chores?
Oh yes. And they were all geared to this. They had over the years grown up with it, you know, and they all knew what to do, what their jobs were. And what amazed me in those years, you know, the girls married around 18, you know, or they married early. I remember my sister Rose, she was 18. I think Bridget was a little bit older, but she wasn't quite 19 either when she married. And in those days, their culture, they picked the husbands for you. Although I remember my brother Charlie married the girl that Rose married the man later. They were all good friends and going around, and Pete Helpling was going with this girl, and Charlie was a handsome man. He was a go-getter. Everything he touched turned to gold, everything. And he was so successful. He ran Mother's Farm, you know, afterwards. But he died early at age 29, and he had three children and one on the way when he died. But he had a car, he had a tractor on the farm. You know, those tractors were very expensive, in even in those days, according to the what I hear. And but he had everything. His wife always nice clothes. He believed in being well dressed. You know, my mother was that way.
Now your mother, with eight children, she of course did she have to make some of her own clothes?
Yeah, they made mostly the clothes, you know. Uh-huh. And my sister, as she get, the oldest sister was a good seamstress. She came along. Of course, they bought the shirts for the men and stuff like that. But during the Depression, my mother helped out. I know Nick had the drugstore in Strasbourg. Mm-hmm. And she said, Nick, take your money out of that bank. She said, that bank is not going to last. That's going to go under. He said, Mother, I can't take my money out. I'm doing business with these people here. Yeah. She said, well, you'll see. She didn't lose a penny during the Depression. She told him to put it in that certain bank, but he didn't. He lost everything he had in that bank. She wanted him to take the money out. Well, she refinanced him then, and but that's what I mean. She had a terrific head on her, very level-headed, and. Like I say, when Dad died, my dad died, there were debts on the land and everything. And when she asked for the money, for the grain back that my dad had loaned, they said, you haven't anything signed. They didn't give her the grain back. Well, she didn't do anything about it, and then when they wouldn't, she couldn't, what could she do? Mm-hmm. But in no time, she was financially independent. Her head worked all the time, that woman's head worked all the time, and she could work out the problems in her mind and with the boys, three older boys, and I always think of it. I remember Lawrence and I were married. We came home. She was a well-dressed woman. She believed in, and she, I had beautiful clothes as I was growing up. And every, and she was fastidious, you might say. If she took a dress off, she wouldn't put it away and hang it up. It had to be ironed that every wrinkle is out before it was hung up back. And when she put a dress on, everything was laid, had to lay the collar, everything had to lay just perfectly. And she walked so straight. She was walked real fast and real straight. And I remember Charlie used to say, oh, I'm so proud of Mother. He said, she's the best-dressed woman in church on Sunday, and the way she carried herself. But I never heard her criticize anyone. I think she was too busy working on running the family, and she never said anything. I never heard her say, here I am with eight children and no father. Never. She just braced herself and forged ahead. Now with the girls, the older girls, I'm sure she must have mentioned some of the stuff about Russia, but we were too little and we were gone all the time. And I can remember Rose, my older sister, saying one time, after she was married and I went out for a visit for a week or two. And she said, you know, Mother said when Dad got out of the army, she met him in church. And he said, Mother was a good looking woman. She had big brown eyes, beautiful skin, and black hair. And she said that, Mother said that Dad asked somebody, who's that woman with the big brown eyes? So so he got introduced to her. And they started going one another and got married.
This was in Russia?
Yeah, was in Russia.
Uh-huh, interesting. Did your ma have to do, of course, a lot of cooking?
Oh, yes.
Did she have the girls and
learn? The girls grew up. By the time Rose was 16, she could cook for anybody and in any amount and anything. And she was an excellent cook. And they didn't have measuring cups, measuring flour, or measuring spoons. They, by hand, the cold stoves they had, I can still see them stick their hand in, see if it's warm enough to put the cake in, you know.
Imagine it.
And the cakes, you never saw cakes like Rose baked. They were like a feather. And when she stirred up the cake, she'd be talking, walking back and forth, throwing a handful of this and a handful of that. And the threshers in the fall used to just wait to come to our house because they said the food was the best food and the cakes were so marvelous. And I can remember my brother John, he was 4 years younger than I was, and we used to play together outside. And so Rose had made all these cakes for the threshers in the morning for lunch. And they were frosted, and they were beautiful. And she had them sitting on the piano in the dining room. The dining room had the piano. And John and I had caught this little baby rabbit, and we had it in our hand, and we went in the house, and we went on in there. And we saw these cakes, and we took the paw of the rabbit on one of the chocolate cakes, and trimmed, decorated all the way around. So now we didn't say anything to anyone and we went out. So when they served the lunch to the threshers, John and I kind of hung around to see who gets the rabbit cake.
That's cute. Did you learn how to do some cooking too then from your sister?
I learned after the girls were gone, married, and my mother was an excellent cook. She knew exactly how to fix anything. She could fix and bread and pies and cakes and stuff. And Rose was like that, my sister Rose. Now, Bridget was a good cook too, but not quite as good as Rose. And they used to say Rose made the best coffee in the area. And it was interesting. But, you know, people on a ranch or on a farm, they grow up, they learn everything, you know.
Did they make some of those German noodles?
Oh, I loved them. The potato noodles?
Yeah.
I made them until a few years ago, and Shirley learned how to make them, and Bob, you know, Frederick, he liked them so well that when they were in Washington, D.C., and Bob was interning after they were first married, he interned there, and we had these FBI friends. John Malone was the head of the FBI here in L.A., and he'd come out. I used to play bridge with he and Margaret, his wife, and I'd have him out on Saturday nights at the house, or I'd be down at their place. Well, he was transferred and was made a director to J. Edgar Hoover. So there was an opening in New York City, at J. Edgar Hoover said, John, if you take the job in New York City as head of the FBI, he said, you'll still remain my director. So he took it. And every time that Lawrence would go to New York and play, John was always there. When we went to Europe in 56, Lawrence and I, he made arrangements all over Europe for security. And they took us around and showed us the places when we got in there. And when we came home, John Malone was there and went on the plane, took Lawrence and I off the plane ahead of anyone so we could go through customs. And we went through customs ahead of everybody. There was no delay. And he was a wonderful man. He was a good Catholic man, John Malone was. And Margaret, he died here about 3-4 years ago, he had cancer. Mm-hmm. They moved from New York to Carbondale, Pennsylvania. And I was in touch with them until John died. Mm-hmm. And Margaret never wanted to fly. She had sort of phobia about airplanes. She wouldn't want to step on them. And one time they were on a plane and there was something wrong. Margaret took her rosary out and started praying. The rosary fellow behind her said, keep right on doing what you're doing to her. And that kind of clinched it.
Yes. Now, relating to religion and going back to your young life, was religion and your faith important in the home of the Renners?
Oh, very religious. My dad was a very religious man. He was, my mother was, I can only think of her, she was like a fireball. She was here, she was there, and she was through in there, and you know, everything was accomplished beautifully. And here, Dad was the relaxed, quiet type. Always thinking what he could do for someone and doing it, you know, and everything and helping out. And financially, we were independent after Dad died in no time and remained that way all the way through.
Mm-hmm. So the church was very important.
The church was the number one thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And we children would go and board at the sister school.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, as we grew up. I mean, for our religion. For 2 years, we had to learn the religion. You don't learn too much in 2 years. Mm-hmm. I realized that later on. Mm-hmm. And but that was important. He wanted the children, so as they all went there. I can remember, we'd have to go in North Dakota, you know how cold it gets. They had the outside bathroom facilities. There was no, there's toilets, you know, out there. And how we'd stand in line in the different ones, freezing to death almost, you know.
To go to the outhouse.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so it was my mother, when we moved to St. Anthony later on, when she retired and turned the ranch over to run by Charlie. There was John, myself, and Joe. And John would go and help out on the ranch, you know, like harvest time or plowing or so on and so forth. And it was a hard life. But I can remember Charlie lived with us for 2 years. That was the, you know, always when the boys got married, they brought the wife in. Mm-hmm. For 2 years. They lived with you and then they branched out on their own. When they made arrangements for Charlie's wedding, Charlie and mother, you know, the parents would get together and and they went out to this girl's family, you know. Mm-hmm. So the next day, I was present, and my ears were always open. So I remember Mother saying, "They can't cook." And see, we were such excellent cooks. She said that you could have killed someone with that cake they served last night, you know. And so when Charlie was married, and I remember she was stirring on the stove something, and I walked in there and I went over there and I looked at her and I said, "You know, Mother said you folks can't cook. She said you could have killed someone with the cake you served when they were out there." You know, kids.
Yes, how old were you then?
No, I guess maybe 5 or 6.
Oh, you remember the, what the, were you over?
Oh, yeah, I can remember, like I told you, I remember my dad in the coffin at 4.
Interesting.
And she said she was very nice, a very sweet person. And she said, "I know, we can't cook like you people can," she said. And she learned and she became just as good a cook from being around and how, you know, they taught her, the family taught her very nicely. And I remember after Charlie died, she came in for mass on Sundays, you know, and she always came by the house, and she was walking back and forth outside and she was crying. And I think Mother went out and she said, "Oh, how I loved to be in this family." Then she married a fella from this was north of Menden, I think. And he was a German-Russian, too. And he was mean to her. He'd see she had these children. And he'd get drunk, and he'd beat up on the kids. And Ambrose was, he had to look after them. So Ambrose said, "I'll go and take the children," he said. "We can't have that." And Ambrose went over and she cried and she said, "If you take my children, you have to take me too." And Ambrose said, "I just couldn't break this woman's heart," he said. I guess he talked to the man about it. Well, when the children were gone once, he used to beat her, but I think they had a nice life after that. Mm-hmm. He resented those children.
Interesting.
Yeah.
In the home, back in the Renner home, there on the ranch.
About 20 years ago, Lawrence and I went up to visit, and Lawrence was playing a concert in one in Aberdeen, one in Grand Forks, you know, and I stayed with the family, you know, and Shirley and Bob were up there. See, Bob's home is in Jamestown, mm-hmm. North Dakota, and Bob and Shirley had gone there, and Laura was 3 years old. They had taken Laura. So they came up, and Bob met Lawrence's relatives and my relatives. And so Bob and Shirley and I drove out to our ranch. I wanted to, and we drove past the public school that I had attended. And we drove on out there, and of course it was sold, it had been sold. And the house, I don't know why they let the house go to pot, because it was built with stone, you know, and Bob couldn't get over it, you know, where it was exposed. There were plates about like that. He said, "Look at that construction that it, and my dad and I guess the boys built it. I don't know how they got these, the stone to have these. And then afterwards, when it was built, the walls were this thick, and it was nice and cool in the summer and warm in the winter, you know, mm-hmm. like that. And then it was stuccoed and was in white. They put the, I don't know, that wasn't paint, it was something else, mm-hmm. I don't know what they called.
How many rooms were in the house, Fern, when you grew
rooms?
Up?
Rooms?
Yes, with eight children, how many rooms were there?
Well, they had two bedrooms and then sleeping in arrangements in the attic. And in those days, they put a couple of double beds in there. And the boys had the one, you know, mm-hmm. bedroom on that side. Mother and the girls had the other bedroom. And I can remember I slept in the middle between Rose and Bridget. And I was so glad when Rose got married. I said, at least I won't be hemmed in.
Right. Did your mother have a chance to do much reading? Did they subscribe to any newspapers?
Yeah. She couldn't read English, but she, the Benedictine brothers, Benedictine priests, and is it Dickinson?
Richardson
published a paper.
North Dakota Herald.
And she'd get that. In German, you know.
Was, yes.
And I can remember she'd have it spread out all over the table. And she was reading all this in German.
Mm-hmm.
I could still see her with it spread out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but she couldn't read English. She couldn't speak English. My dad could. Served on juries and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he educated himself on it.
Mm-hmm. Your ma had you go off to school, so she was very supportive of your going to school after high school.
Very, very supportive. She was pro-education, and so were the family. Like I told you, my oldest brother, he said, I'd give anything under the sun if I could have gone to school. And they were all pro-education. But the girls didn't get to go away. They went to public school, grade school, and that was the extent.
Mm-hmm. Were you the only one that graduated from high school of the girls?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember there was a girl I palled around with. They lived across the street in St. Anthony.
What was her name, Fern?
Their name was Helbling, and I can't remember her name. And she, her folks, she was adopted by the Helblings across the street. They were distant relatives of Rose's husband. And I was outside one day, and she came over from across the street, and she was crying, and she said, you know, my parents are forcing me into the convent. She said, when I'm 18, I'm going to leave. I don't want to be a nun, she said. Mm-hmm. I'm going to leave. And they put her in the convent in Milwaukee. What is that, the Franciscan nuns?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they put her in there. So when I was in nurses training in Yankton at Sacred Heart, one day, I was coming in the front door, and a nun was coming down the steps. And I looked at her, and I thought, she looks familiar, but she wasn't of they were the Benedictines, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I went on in. Then she came home for a visit. She became a nun and loved it after she was
really?
There. Yeah. And she asked, I think she came over and she asked Mother where I was. And Mother said, well, she's in nurses training at Sacred Heart in Yankton. And she said, oh, I saw her. She said she was coming in as I was coming out. Too bad we didn't speak.
Did you see her later then?
No, I never saw her again. Because I was down there, graduated, and I've got a hospital position in Dallas, Texas. And I was gone a year and then got married. Lawrence and I got married.
Mm-hmm. Back on the farm, Fern, was there time for any playtime or music or anything like that?
Yeah, I was playing all the time, and in especially in the summertime. I would look like an Indian. I was so brown because, you didn't wear anything on your head. And I was out all day long, as a kid. And when Charlie and they had their first child, and they used to want me to rock the cradle. So I'd be outside playing, and pretty soon I'd get a call to come in and rock the cradle. And I'd go in and I'd rock that cradle, and the kid would be quiet, So I'd rock it a little while. Then I'd give it a good push so it wouldn't cry. And I'd run out and I'd go way down the creek, and so I wouldn't have to take care of that kid.
What kind of games did you play?
Oh, games would be, John was older and Joe was younger, And we'd play hopscotch or tag or, a lot of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Cards we'd play, I don't remember what you called it.
But so those years when you were growing up, of course, you learned English in school,
so
you'd speak with the other children in English, or did you talk with them in German, too?
German kids, German. English kids. There were Bohemians that lived next to our ranch, and their girl and I. We went to public school, and sometimes I'd go and stay overnight with her, or she'd come down, and that spoke English. And I can remember one time, I think I was maybe 7, and it was Joe and I, he was the younger brother. We went out and it was hilly. We walked along this ridge of hills. There was a home and it was vacant. So we went in and looked around. And, they didn't lock these homes. People left, I guess. And they had rhubarb growing around. It was this tall. And we loved rhubarb pie.
Mm-hmm.
So